Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Jeffrey Dahmer, Ted Bundy, the Night Stalker. These names are infamous, but do you really know what drove them to kill?
In Mind of a Serial Killer, we don't just tell you the story. We break down the psychology behind it.
Follow and listen to Mind of a Serial Killer, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U. AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com now. Here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
All right. Hello, everybody. Delighted that you are with us. Trevor Harris is our producer. Joining us right now, former University of Miami assistant basketball coach and one of the top scouts in the NBA working for the Denver Nuggets is Scott Howard. Scott, good evening to you.
Hey, Joe. How are you?
Doing great. Hanging right in there. Bouncing around the country, watching college basketball. You get to watch both NBA and college basketball. From the college perspective, you see a lot of games. Where is the best college basketball being played now? Is it in the South?
It is in the Southeast. The Southeastern Conference is an incredible league. I've seen all but two of the SEC teams, and there's not a bad team in that league. There's, in fact, I sat with one of the coaches, head coaches, Dennis Gates from Missouri, who had a great win last night at Florida, but I sat with him before the game on Saturday against Vanderbilt. I said, your league is a monster. He looked at me, he said, Scott, you can't circle one. And what he meant by you can't circle a victory. There's no weak team in that league. So that's where it's being, the best ball is being played.
You know, a couple of years, well, maybe it's maybe 5 years ago now, maybe it's the Great Revenge, but Greg Sankey, their commissioner, he hired Mike Trangese, the former commissioner of the Big East, who, you know, we came into contact with quite often. Trangese went in there as a consultant to help make that league more competitive. And whatever they've done, probably upping the payroll, but they are, what would you say their brand is? Is it their athleticism? What is their number one style of play? What have you seen?
I think for the most part, the league is up-tempo. I think they've gone to a heavy dose of three-point shooting in that league, which they didn't used to do. The other thing, too, Joe, is there are a slew of really good coaches in that league.
Yeah.
They've committed. I think probably what happened in the SEC is they had so much football money, and I think that they went in that league and made a conscious decision to start pouring money into basketball. They went out, hired really good coaches. Most of that league has upped their facility game. They've committed major NIL money, and I'm not a fan of all of it, but they've made a major commitment to basketball in the SEC.
Yeah. Their games are great. There are a couple of upsets. The Gators got beat by Missouri, and Alabama got defeated, and then Kentucky seems to be rolling right along as well. As Tennessee, we saw them earlier, University of Miami, and they're great on the defensive end, and they can score, and they've got size, and I don't see a weakness with Tennessee.
The only thing with Tennessee, they've gotten bit by the injury bug and a kid that transferred on them in the middle of at semester that they weren't expecting. So they're in a little bit of a problem with depth. But geez, I look at the ACC too. And one of the most surprising teams in the ACC, in my view, is Louisville. And they're doing it with seven scholarship guys. I mean, they're only playing seven players, and they're winning. So I think probably a lot of the deal is putting your best players on the floor, play them heavy minutes, and then just pray that guys don't go down on you or you don't get in foul trouble.
Well, let me see if we can have this discussion. Now, kind of tiptoe around, it's kind of the dilemma that the University of Miami has, but it's probably not only with the University of Miami, but it's been pretty glaring. And so they could not, as Coach L said in the last hour, could not retain their own players, got stuck in a bind, a little bit of a bind, and recruited what they thought were very good mid-major players that were very interested in moving into the Power Four level. And maybe 5 years ago, if you did that study, it probably said it's not going to work. But I think that study probably has changed a little bit. However, the guys they brought in, the numbers show, I mean, they got two guys that are 140 or something like that in three-point shooting. Is that a big jump? Is that a dangerous – is that something that when the portal opens again that coaches are going to be looking at moving players up? Now, I know Kansas is having success. They have a player that I think came from Division II, but that jump, is it still big or is the gap closer?
No, it's big. It's a big It's a big jump. And
that's what I thought.
The portal thing is interesting. I know you and I and Don Bailey had a kind of a roundtable discussion on Hurricane Hotline about 6 weeks ago or so. And to me, what has happened with that, Joe, is the portal and NIL coming in at the same time. Not that one is bad or one is great, but the fact that they happened at the same exact time, it screwed up the ecosystem of college sports, because the way it was when Coach Larrañaga was coaching and I was coaching, there was a path to development, and a player came in, and when he was a freshman, he didn't play much and he played a little more. So that, and like the old school way that it happened, that doesn't make it, it's still that it should be that way anymore. It's not going to be, because that horse is long out of the gate. But what has happened is, if a guy is a freshman and he doesn't play much, he just transfers and he gives up and he doesn't stick with it. And then college coaches have done it to themselves in some ways as well, is that they have decided they want to be old. They don't want young players. They don't want to develop players. They want to play guys that are 23, 24 years old. So if one of the things that we see in pro sports is you when you draft a guy, if you miss on him, if he's young, you can still trade him. If he's old and you missed on him, he has no value to anybody else in the league. And the same thing has happened now in college sports, is that they're taking these fourth and fifth year and sometimes sixth year player and they've moved them up a division, but now you can't trade them in the middle of the year. They have no value. So. Right. Yeah, that's a big jump. That's a really big jump. I want to be clear. There are always guys at mid-major schools that make the NBA. There always are. But the majority of the NBA are players from Power 4, Power 5 conference schools. There was a reason those guys were at that league to start with. Now, on occasion, there's one that just develops, you know, Steph Curry or somebody like that, but those were 4 year players that stayed the course. It got better. Power Five schools missed on those kids to a degree, but for the bulk of it, that's a big jump.
Scott Howard is our guest, former University of Miami assistant basketball coach, now scout with the Denver Nuggets. I listen to a lot of coaches talk, and I'm sure you do as well. And I always wonder this question. When they speak, are they talking about the team they have or the team that they want to have? I know they have a group of guys, but you'll hear them say, oh, we're great competitors. Those guys want to come out of the locker room, play at a high level, blah, 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 blah. Is that the team that they have or the team they want to have?
I think for the most part, when you hear a coach speak, it's about the team they want to have.
Most of the time it's coach speak. I mean, I coached for 17 years. I get it. You can't throw your guys under the bus. You can't say things on a radio show that, you know, you want repeated. You can't do it. If you're going to do it, you got to do it in a closed environment. But so I think for the most part, it's what the team they wish they had. And then the championship teams are the that's what they really are. You know, it's, when a team can compete for a championship, most of the time what the coach says is the truth.
And how big is the challenge at the college level right now for coaches to try to make sure they mold a team together? I saw one last night, Duke. Shire's doing a great job. Very unselfish, very connected, probably a big payroll, but they're playing very well and very unselfish is what jumps out to me. How hard is that around the college landscape?
Oh, I think in some respects it's harder than it is in the NBA, Joe, because in the NBA there's a pecking order. I'm fortunate to be with the Denver Nuggets. We have the best player in the world, Nikola Jokic, and everybody in our team knows Nikola Jokic is the best player. Nobody even wants to argue about it. I think in college, because those guys are trying to get to that next level, unless a guy's got a really perfect team, a pristine locker room in college, all of that, there's always an underlying current of either somebody isn't getting paid enough or somebody's being played out of position. Oh, I'm not a two guard. I should really be a point guard. And so I think that the outside noise in college basketball that affects the players and in college football too, I would assume that the outside noise that the players are hearing is louder than it's ever been. And it's not healthy for them.
Yeah.
And they many, many, many of the guys, players have agents and that's all good and well, because the players, if the player's going to make money, he's got to have somebody help him get it. Like I'm a big boy, I see the whole picture, but the best players in any sport can handle the truth. And oftentimes from some source, unless the kid has had a heavy dose of reality when he was young, he's getting fed a lot of bad information. And I think that creates a problem in a lot of locker rooms when those kids aren't, when everything isn't truthful. And when the coach is trying to be truthful with the kid, but he's got an outside voice who's telling him that's not the way it is, then it's a recipe for disaster.
Well, I'm sure you saw what Mick Cronin said about his team a week ago. He said they're delusional, which probably 95% of the coaches could say.
Yeah, and then Mick got himself kicked out the next game because I think he didn't want to watch it anymore. I think it's really I'll be honest, Joe. I still, because of doing what I do with the Nuggets, I'm at a college game every night, and a lot of these guys are really good friends of mine. I go and say hello to them before the game, or I call them during the season, or text, whatever. There are very, very few coaches in college basketball that are enjoying themselves. They like it on the 1st and the 15th of the month. But, those are the 2 days the paycheck comes in. Other than that, they're not having a great amount of fun, because it's just I feel so bad for Jim Larrañaga in this way. Jim didn't end the way Jim deserved to have his career end, and he just got tired, and I don't blame him, and I understand. But a guy that's that accomplished should be able to go out his own way on top. And that's the sad part about coaching, is very few coaches get to go out there, on top their own way. And so it's nature. But at the same time, I just don't see guys really enjoying. I don't think most coaches don't feel that they impact players' lives in the way that they did years ago. Education is not valued by a great percentage of athletes, and I don't know for sure in non-revenue sports. I don't have a feel with that. But, you know, when I was working for Leonard at University of Miami, we sold a great education at University of Miami because it was the truth and it was important at that time. I don't think it's important to a lot of these guys now. I don't think getting a degree is something that's of the utmost value. It's how much money can you pay me this year? I think that's a problem, you know?
Well, along those lines, and going back to what you said before about the noise, I've got a lot of friends in the coaching business, as you know, and what you hear is, that's almost unfathomable, but what you hear is that the kids are being told not when to play or not to play. You mentioned the guy for Tennessee goes in the transfer portal in the middle of the year, and didn't know the rule.
Didn't even know that he couldn't get a scholarship at another school. I'm gonna quit and move on. He didn't understand. He had no place to go.
Or in some cases they look at it and say, oh well, wait a minute. If you play X amount of games, you'll be ineligible to transfer next year. So then they tell them to shut it down. Don't play.
Yeah. It's just a different time. And look, everything evolves. These coaches will figure it out. I wish that there would have been a way for the portal and the NIL thing to not have happened at the same time. I think if they would have had a way to adjust to one, then bring the other one in, but they happened at the same time. It was a recipe for real problems. There's nothing the schools could do about it. I mean, the NCAA just threw up their hands because they're losing every lawsuit they're in. I don't blame the NCAA, and the NCAA really, at the end of the day, the NCAA is about the membership. Right. It's not about some guy that's sitting up in an office in Indianapolis making unilateral decisions. It's what the schools voted for. But it's an interesting time in college athletics, and I don't think it's going to be resolved anytime soon.
Scott Howard is our guest. Before we let you go, there's a group of players that come out of high school every year. We'll call them the five-star guys or the diaper dandies or whatever Dick Vitale would call them. And they have to go to college for 1 year for the most part. NBA, 3, 4, 5 years ago, loved those players, the one-and-done guys, because they, as you mentioned, they liked the players when they were young. College basketball has gone older now. What happens to those guys that were supposed to be the one-and-done guys that aren't playing at such a great level in their so-called one-and-done year? How do you view them?
Well, I will say there are benefits to everything, even bad things there are benefits to. One of the things we've seen in the NBA is there are more kids sticking for a second and possibly a third year than we've ever seen before because of the NIL money. If there's one thing that's a positive about it, there are kids last year, I think there were 8 first round picks that were not freshmen, including a couple of lottery picks that came back to school and they got better in college instead of trying to get better in the NBA. And in a lot of those cases, those kids would have been playing in the G League. So they did things maybe a little bit more old school because they could make that NIL money. So I think we've seen, like 4 years ago, there were 48 college players that left their name in the draft and still had college eligibility remaining. Last year, there were 14. And it's because they could stick around and come back to school and make money. So there is a benefit to that, and we see it. And look, at the end of the day, I wish these college kids would understand how lucky they are. Most of those guys are being coached really well. I mean, those kids at Miami could not have been getting coached better than they were by Jim Larrañaga. They wouldn't have developed any more in the NBA than they did at Miami. And, we talked about the SEC, how good the coaches and how good the coaches in the ACC. There's not a bad coach in the ACC. And so if you know, I kind of harped on it a little bit early in the conversation, but like, to me, there's a way, there's a, the circle of life and the ecosystem, it takes care of itself as long as you don't mess with it. And I think that that can happen once they sort through how to get through all this way of, you know, the constant movement and just developing as a player being the most important instead of the money.
All right, Scott, always great, always informative. I'll see you at the Wasco Center here, I hope, in the near future, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love going over there. I feel so bad for Jim. And I spoke to Jim on the phone right after he stepped down. And hopefully the Canes fans will come out and keep supporting them. And Dan Radakovich's got a big hire on his hands. Probably, I know he hired a women's coach last year, right? Right after he first got there. So this is a big hire for him. Because I was thinking about this today. It's gotten to the point now where, because college athletic departments have to start revenue share with their players, and that number's already set, all of a sudden the amount of people that come into the games is important. It used to be they just counted on the TV money, and they had enough TV money to make everything work. Now that they're going to give all that money to the players, they need that building to be full. They can't have it. The economics of college sports are now going to depend on that building being packed. And if they are, the athletic departments are going to survive. And if the place is only a third full, those athletic departments are going to be in trouble.
Yeah, well, it's a big hire. I'm sure there are a lot of very interested parties in this one. And
Dan knows what he's doing, though. He did a great job at Clemson. So he hired Brad Brunell. That guy is one of the best coaches in the country. So Dan knows what he's doing.
Yeah. All right, Scott, thank you for joining us. And by the way, since you are a friend of the program, you are one of my regulars, and we'll be talking more college basketball here during the winter.
I look forward to it. Thanks so much.
All right, Scott. Scott Howard joining us here on the show, former University of Miami assistant basketball coach and now scout for the Denver Nuggets and a friend of the program. I'll tell you who's a friend of the program as well, Ed Williamson and his lovely wife, Carol. And you talk about doing a great job. Ed Williamson founded Williamson Cadillac over 50 years ago, but they're more than a dealership. They're our friends. They're our neighbors. Williamson Cadillac has built a loyal client base by staying focused on the customer experience. Customers are treated like family. Go in today, experience Williamson Cadillac's preferred atmosphere, easy to find, located on US 1 at 104th Street, just south of the Palmetto. Check out the inventory online at WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com. Everything's coming in, CT4, CT5, XT5, XT6, and the new all-electric Lyriq. They've got it all at Williamson. Carol Williamson will be there. Ed Williamson will be there. Great general manager in Jeff Rogers. Your experience will be top shelf. Williamson Cadillac, Williamson is Miami.